The After Dark newsletter was started by Art Bell back in 1995, and it's still going strong 13 years later. Call right now to subscribe. It's $39.95 for 1 year and contains a variety of different subjects every month, just like we do here on Coast to Coast AM. There are stories about the supernatural, strange science, human oddities, plus you'll find interviews with frequent guests, my monthly column, and much more. Call 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com.
Here's what you missed on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Is disclosure right around the corner?
My scenario for disclosure is this. I believe that we've already discovered life on Mars. We discovered it decades ago, and we backed away from that story. That was to give everybody in institutions a chance to embrace the new paradigm of life in outer space. I think that's going to be an announcement, and it's not going to be too far in the future.
Now we take you back to the night of March 27th, 2002, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, here is Brian Walker, a.k.a. Rocket Guy. Brian, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Art. Nice to be here.
It was, how long ago did we do the interview?
Last May, so just a short, just under a year ago.
Just under a year. And if I recall correctly, you were planning on launching in the spring, I think it was May.
Yes, I was hoping to launch this May, and just as a quick update, I'm not going to make that launch with the full-size rocket. There's been a lot of things that's been going on. This project has gotten increasingly more complex as time goes on, and I actually had never really established a launch date. It was more.
Oh, that's right. It was kind of maybe May. I remember that.
No. Yeah, and it was more than anything else driven by the fact that ever since I went public with this just about 2 years ago, the amount of interest in media has just been so overwhelming that not only has that taken a lot of time, but there've been literally tens of thousands of people that have inquired about wanting to come see the launch, and so I tried to have a date up that would kind of appease that, and it's just, this is not the kind of project I can work around.
Look, even NASA has lots of delays.
Yeah, and this is about as one-man a project as you can get.
Yeah, that's right, and if there's any concern and that's causing a delay, why, hey, I wouldn't hesitate for 1 second to put it off again and again and again, Brian.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, it's your butt.
That's right.
Now, some people obviously will not have heard the first program that, mm-hmm. that we did together, so we need to do a brief recap. What exactly are your plans?
Okay, well, just a real quick summary of what's going on. You know, when I was 6 years old, that was my first earliest memories of watching the space program. I'm 45 now, and that was at the very beginning. And like a lot of the kids in that day, I wanted to be an astronaut, but by the time I was about 9, I'd kind of concluded I just wasn't cut out for the military career slash academic side, and
you didn't have all the right stuff.
I didn't have all the right stuff. Yeah. I mean, looking back at those, you know, the original Mercury 7 and what was required, I just, some kind of gut instinct told me I was not going to get into space that way, and right. So I had basically a childhood dream that I'd someday grow up and build my own rocket, and that kind of was always in the back of my mind, although I think for most of my life it never seemed a reality I would approach. About 10 years ago, I began to start experiencing success as an inventor, and this dream kind of reemerged, and since it had never been done yet, I started looking into what the possibilities were and would it really be possible to do this, and I've set a goal of attempting to make a flight straight up. It's not an orbital flight. I'm not going to reach orbital altitude or orbital velocity.
Yeah, but 30 miles. You're going up 30 miles, right?
Yeah, 30 miles.
That's really up.
It's way up.
That's way up.
Last April, I flew in a MiG-25 in Moscow, and that was at 80,000 feet, which is about half that high, and that's high.
All right, well, so you must have made a fair amount of money with your inventions to be able to go flying about in MiGs in Russia and to be undertaking the kind of project you're undertaking here. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair to say.
So, and your inventions were good.
Yeah, I've got a number of toys that are doing very well. One in particular that's become a big hit at the Disney parks and stuff. That's been just an amazing success in that product. And, of course, I am basically trying to fulfill a dream. And one of the biggest benefits, if not the biggest benefit, of the immediate attention I've had has been, you know, self-motivation on a project like this can be extremely difficult because there's times when I see this project in its whole entirety and I just kind of shake my head like, what am I doing? This is just too big. Mm-hmm. But the amount of emails I've had from people and the support and the interest that this has gained has done a whole lot to help, you know, get over those hurdles.
You know there's a chance you're going to kill yourself, right?
Well, I'll tell you, I won't launch in this thing if I have a feeling that I will not at least escape. My number one mission is survivability, and number two is success.
Yeah, I understand. But even with all the, you know, precautions that NASA takes, I mean, people die. So.
Well, that's true. And what I've done, of course, is one of the things, one of the reasons I've had some delays is, number one, I've decided late summer, first thing that happened is I ran out of room and I had to put up another building. I just didn't have the interior space anymore. My shop is where I build all the components, and that means a lot of fiberglass work and messy, you know, dust and constantly building pieces. I needed a place to actually assemble it, so I put up a 45-foot diameter geodesic dome, and that serves as the assembly building, and it's 27 feet at the highest point inside, so I can actually work on the rocket standing vertically. And that project, of course, I started, believe it or not, that building began to go up on September 11th. September 11th was the day that the work crew came up to put the kit up. And, you know, like everyone else, I went through several months of just, you know, kind of this bleak, not knowing what, you know, I was spending so much time and money on this project, and, you know, the whole situation in the world was such that there were times when I was ready to give up on it, just not knowing. And the dome took 6 months to get to the point where now it's ready to be used.
All right, before we proceed, let me ask you, what would you say now is your projected date for launch?
Okay, well, what I've done is I've gone kind of backed up a bit, and I've been working on a rocket that's one half the size, carries about 1/20th the fuel load, and the rocket itself is one half size, and I've basically wanted to test the features that I'm planning to use on the full size rocket. This test rocket is designed to go to about 15,000 feet, and it's on a mobile launcher. It's a 16-foot trailer, and it uses a air catapult to actually initiate the launch. Okay. It'll accelerate the rocket to 30 miles an hour in 8 feet, and that gives me, you know, immediate stability. I'm going to be doing test launches on that late spring, early summer, and my goal is to do 3 test launches on it empty and then ride it up the fourth time to an altitude of 15,000 feet, and then I'll skydive from it. It's designed that I won't come down in the rocket. I'll come out of the rocket.
And skydive back to Earth?
Right.
Wait a minute. How high again?
15,000
feet. And from there you'll literally sort of jump out.
Right, the capsule that I'm in, and the pictures of this, or some of the pictures you have on your website, show the rocket body of this. The capsule is one in which I'm not quite standing, not quite squatting inside.
Yes.
There's a full-length door that opens up, and basically the panel pops off. The rocket will go up, and then there's a nose cone that comes off, and a 26-foot parachute will come out, and then as soon as that parachute comes out, the panel pops open, and I'll come out, and I'll just do what would be a normal, typical skydive.
All right. I recommend now to all of my audience who have already not gone to the website, the best way to understand how serious this man is and how far he's gone is to look through the photographs he has provided under a program, tonight's guest info. Please go to Brian Walker, click on the new projects, and go through those photographs, then click at the bottom on previous photos, go through you'll see the entire rocket. You will see you'll see the whole rocket compound from the air. You'll see the craft, the capsule. You'll see the whole thing. Everything is laid out for you, and you will realize just how serious or crazy, depending on your point of view. The man you're listening to right now really is, but he certainly is extremely serious. All the hardware is here. I'm curious, Brian, how much have you spent so far?
Oh, I probably got right now probably around $300,000 to $350,000 in this.
Well, that's quite a bit.
Well, a good deal of that has been in the infrastructure because I had to not just building the rocket is one thing, but it's setting up all the buildings, the shop, the equipment, the tools, the jigs. For instance, I built a centrifuge and I finally got that operational last November, just about time to wrap it up for winter. And that's so I can get used to the G-forces.
Have you been in your centrifuge?
I've been in it to 3 Gs. I've had it run empty up to 8.5 Gs. I've been in it only to 3 because that's when the weather, by the time it was ready to start testing, the weather turned and it was just time to wrap it up.
How would you term going into the centrifuge at, say, 3 Gs? Does it begin to get uncomfortable?
3 Gs... consistently, the thing about a centrifuge as opposed to being in an aerobatic aircraft or even on carnival rides, the G's forces are consistent in one direction, so you're not feeling the nausea aspect of the vertigo from having your equilibrium slammed left.
Okay,
right.
But still, you weigh...
You feel 3 times your weight, your chest gets heavy. Now, in Russia, I've been up to... In the Russian centrifuge, I went up to 8 G's, and at that point, you have to actually... work very hard to keep your throat open and your chest cavity open, because if you lose that and they flatten out from the forces, you don't really have any muscles, for instance, to open your throat back up, and they have to immediately stop it. But 8 Gs is you're fighting to just kind of maintain at that point.
And what kind of G-forces are you going to pull in the launch?
Probably around 6 Gs.
Around 6 for what period?
Well, it'll be immediately at the launch. There's a considerable slam because of the air catapult that launches it. And then it'll moderate a little bit. And then for 90 seconds, on a full-size rocket, the motor runs for 90 seconds. And there'll be a consistent 6 to as many as high as 8 Gs. And I know I can take that because in Russia, when I did the... I did 6 Gs the first time I went. When I went back last year, they took me to 8. And the doctor in charge of the centrifuge program said that had I been training for a Soyuz launch, he would have okayed me on the centrifuge aspect.
Really, really?
Which was very neat.
Does it go? You went up in a MiG what?
MiG-25.
What does it cost to take a ride to MiG-25?
That was about $11,000.
About $11,000. You've now taken 2?
No, I've only done the MiG once. I went over in June of 2000, the first time to Russia, and I went with a expedition tour company that puts together exotic vacations and did a week cosmonaut training, a week long cosmonaut training thing at the Star City, and they took you in the centrifuge and we went up into zero gravity parabolic flights.
Did you happen to tell them while you were over there what your plans were?
Oh yeah, they were, of course the translator, they first looked at me and scratched their head and couldn't figure it out, but when they started seeing the pictures of what I was doing, they were very enthusiastic, very excited about it. In fact, one of the really neat things was the fact that for most of these people that I met there, they'd never really had any contact with someone from our system, our capitalist, democratic, society. And for them to see one person approaching what is their pride, a one-man space program, was very, it was mind-blowing to them that just because I come from a country that gives individuals the right to do whatever they want to do, basically.
That's another subject we're going to cover.
it was an exciting time, and I've been back 4 times now.
So they didn't laugh real hard, or
no.
At least not in your view.
No, not at all. In fact, when I was out, I went to one air base when I was there last April. I not only did the MiG-25, but I went and did a little L-39, which is a trainer jet, and when the commander of the base saw the article, they gave me one of their club patches and put my thing up on the wall, and they were very, very, very excited. No, I didn't get any kind of, ridicule at all.
Well, I would like to come up even to see your bailout at $15,000.
That's going to be a very significant event in and of itself, just because no one's ever launched themselves in a private rocket. I mean, as far as It's either been in a Russian or American spacecraft that any human being has ever gone up in a rocket, whether it's, you know, 500 feet or 5,000 feet or 100 miles.
Are there any laws against your doing this?
Well, really the only thing is that depending on where I launch from, I will need to get a waiver from the FAA to utilize that airspace, and that makes absolute sense.
That's all? I mean, in other words, you obviously issue a warning that aircraft shouldn't be in the area when you do what you're about to do, right?
We're right. It's not me issuing a warning. I go to them. It's like, for instance, Tripoli is a nationwide model rocket organization that has chapters all over the U.S., and when they're going to do one of their high-altitude launches...
They notify the FAA.
They don't only notify them. They actually have to apply for a permit, and FAA will grant them a waiver.
I see, but that's as serious as it gets. And they do routinely grant those waivers for rocket enthusiasts, right?
Sure.
And those kind of rocket enthusiasts have to be licensed.
Well, they have to be members of a group and stuff. I'm going to be basically just going for a simple waiver that says, look, you know...
Now, they do have to be licensed. They go through a testing procedure, I believe, don't they?
Well, it depends on what class of...
But when you really get up there to where you're going to put some way up there, then you are required to get some kind of license, I think,
sure.
Right?
And, well, yes, you know what, and I'll tell you what. I look at this project, and I haven't got to that crossroad yet of having to deal with it. There's so much involved in this project right now that
I do think that's true, though. I have a number of
I wouldn't doubt that for
model me. Rocketry magazines, mm-hmm. You know, and they talk about, and in fact, they won't even sell rockets to people who have not been licensed at a certain class or something or another. You know, it's kind of interesting. I looked into it because I wanted a rocket. I want a rocket for my front. I was going to put a rocket on my front lawn.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that it would send an interesting message to the community and my neighbors.
Sure.
Just to sort of have that rocket out there, never necessarily to launch it, but I mean,
right.
It'd be very cool on the front lawn.
Well, and I can understand. I mean, the whole point is that the government's got a very vested interest in making sure that...
But listen, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. Hold it right there. You know I had to do this, right? I mean, listen to the words.
0 hour. 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from March 27th, 2002.
It's lonely out in space. On such a timeless flight, and I think it's gonna be a long, long time. The touchdown brings me round and get to find. I'm not the man they think I am at home.